Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. It has been almost 3 months since Puerto Rico was devastated by Hurricanes Irma and Maria. Power and food have been hard to come by, leading many island residents to stay with family in cities like Springfield as the island slowly recovers. Well, tonight at 9 and Sunday at 7 a.m., we'll air a special edition of Marketplace Weekend. Host Lizzie O'Leary spent a week in Puerto Rico reporting on the aftermath of the storms, and she joins us now. Welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what did you see when you were in Puerto Rico? What do things look like today?
Well, I would say a couple of things. You know, for people to really get their first feel of it, you need to understand how kind of silent things feel right now when you walk around, particularly San Juan. A lot of the traffic lights aren't working. People aren't out. And you know, that's sort of reflected in the broader statistics. More than 100,000 people have left the island. So those are sort of short-term worries. Are they staying with family somewhere else, like you mentioned? Or is that going to be a long-term decision that, you know, affects the recovery as we move down the road? I would say really the biggest thing that underlies everything we looked at is power. You know, most of the power plants in Puerto Rico are in the south. Most of the people are in the northeast. And the transmission lines between those two things run through the mountains. There was a lot of damage. The grid was not in great shape before Maria. So that's a really big deal. We were walking around Old San Juan one night and, you know, there were a lot of businesses closed because they didn't have power. And then you'd find the odd place like a bar that did. We met a man named Joseph Saltero who was hanging out in this bar because, you know, he didn't have power at a home.
Yeah, because the air condition, I mean, and you want to watch TV. I mean, once I go home later, there's nothing but heat and mosquitoes.
But there's also this other question, particularly when you get outside San Juan. You have people who need basics like ice. For example, we met a woman in Atillo in the northeast named Glorimar Rivera. And, you know, she was talking about needing things for her grandmother, needing medication. So you have this system where people are doing things like stocking up on limited amounts of eggs, limited amounts of cheese or meat, the kinds of things where maybe they've only got enough ice to get through a few days, or, you know, only so much diesel fuel to run the generator. It is really an incremental situation right now because of the power.
Is there any idea of what the timeline is like for getting the grid back up to speed?
No. I mean, different people have made different promises. The governor has said one thing. Other people, the power company PREPA, has said one thing. You know, we also spent some time with the Army Corps of Engineers folks who are overseeing about 60 to 70% of the restoration. And right now, honestly, I don't think anyone can give a solid guess even as to when power is going to be back.
So what are the impacts on day-to-day life when you don't have power? And I'm speaking as someone who very much takes it for granted.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that is hard to think about when we just think about how basic you know, lights are, air conditioning, or, you know, now in the Northeast, heat. So one of the biggest ones actually is generators, right? A generator, even if you have one, even if you're used to it for an emergency, it's supposed to be run a day, a week, not almost 3 months. So that means people are spending hundreds, or for businesses, you know, thousands of dollars a week on diesel fuel. That is incredibly expensive. Now there's enough diesel fuel on the island. At the beginning of the recovery, there really wasn't. It also means incurring a lot of costs. You know, we went to a little grocery store in Toa Baja, which is outside San Juan, and the guy who ran it, you know, it's a small convenience store type grocery store. He lost about $25,000 of food because he couldn't keep things refrigerated. You know, people are losing money on things like milk. Cows who went to a dairy farm, they lost somewhere between 90 and 200 cows at $2,500 a pop because of the storm. And then you have stuff like medication. You know, we went to a FEMA center. People are there talking about, can I get insulin? How do I make sure that my grandmother has what she needs? A lot of those daily things. And then there's this image that I want to share with you because this, I think, is something you don't think about. It takes a really long time to get anywhere, even dropping your kid off at school, if their school is reopened, because there aren't that many traffic lights. So everyone is on this weaving stop and go, you go, I go, okay, system. I was obsessed with watching the traffic and how much it impacted even the most basic things people need to do every day.
Let's talk a little bit about how we ended up in this crisis to begin with. Puerto Rico has had issues, massive structural issues with its debt well before the storms came in. So what role is that playing in the actual recovery?
It's playing a pretty big one. I mean, look, when we think about the debt situation, so, okay, the island filed for bankruptcy back in May. That's $74 billion to creditors, then about $50 billion to pension holders. $9 billion of that debt roughly belongs to the power company, PREPA. And so when you think about a place that was heavily indebted and some of that debt belonged to the infrastructure authorities, it really affects everything. And I'll kind of break it down for you in a couple of different ways. Number one, the island has been in recession more or less since 2006. And that's one of the things that sort of necessitated all that borrowing. The other thing is when you have those pension holders and other folks, after there was a bill passed in Congress, PROMESA, that allowed some sort of debt restructuring, it meant cuts to basic services to try to manage and restructure some of that debt. So you had the debt load, you had the cuts to services, and then on top of that, because the electric authority had its own debt, there were things like maintenance that just got deferred because there wasn't the money to do that. So, you know, not only was the grid heavily hit by the storm, but the grid was not in great shape to begin with. You know, if you imagine, say, two big transmission lines outside of Albany, there's probably a little road clear cut next to those lines. Well, in the mountains in the middle of Puerto Rico, there's probably not a road maintained next to those lines right now because that maintenance was deferred given the amount of debt that the electric company was in. In part of our reporting, we went to the Army Corps of Engineers headquarters in San Juan, and I talked to Colonel John Lloyd, who is overseeing the power restoration issue, and he said, look, that deferred maintenance has made the rebuilding of the grid so much harder.
In a lot of those rugged areas, the terrain, a lot of the maintenance for the access roads hasn't been done for years. I mean, just driving around, you see a lot of vegetation overgrown on some of the lines. That would be normal work that a utility company would be responsible for.
Well, I'm a fan of Marketplace, and I'm always here for the Marketplace twist in a story. And you actually found...
Our special angle.
Yeah. You found that some businesses are booming as a result of the storm and the recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the ones that you'd think of naturally when you have this big electrical grid issue is solar. So the solar industry is seeing a big boom. We went out with this guy, Alejandro Uriarte, who runs a solar company called New Energy, and they do installations, they do storage. He said they have had as much business in the months since Maria as they would typically get in a year. And one of the things people really want is storage. So it's about $15,000 to have a 6-kilowatt unit for your home, but about $10,000 if you want a battery. And that battery is really helpful if the grid goes down, you want to power your fans, a mini fridge, whatever. And Uriarte said, look, there was interest in solar before the storm, but now people are really, really curious about what solar can offer them.
Prior to Maria, people were turning to solar basically for, to save money. Electricity costs here in Puerto Rico are expensive. This change to solar was going to happen, but the hurricane just accelerated what was coming anyway.
One other thing is the construction industry. And, you know, I don't have the numbers as solidly, but boy, there are construction crews everywhere. And actually, the construction industry pre-Maria had taken a big hit because the economy had slowed down so much. So when we talked to an economist there, he said, look, I think it's quite possible that you're going to see a big boom in construction because there's just so much to rebuild.
What did people you met during your reporting trip have to say about the federal response to the recovery?
We certainly heard people who were critical of it, and this was actually PREPA, the power company, of their contract with Whitefish Energy that has gotten so much press here. I also think, though, one of the things we saw is given how widespread the devastation was, how slow a lot of services were to get to people. We went to a FEMA center that had only been recently opened. We went out to, you know, a couple of other places where there just wasn't that much support. You know, power lines looping down in front of the road. The thing you do see is a very strong reliance on friends, family, and neighbors, which honestly mirrors other disasters I've covered, but particularly in a place like Atillo, where the dairy industry is, and, you know, where we met Gloria Rivera, people are very much helping their neighbors because it's possible that maybe they haven't seen federal help or they haven't seen help from the government of Puerto Rico.
What surprised you that you saw on the island?
The omnipresent sound of generators. I mean, it is everywhere, just sort of constant background hum. You have the coquis, the little tree frogs who make their cute chirps, and then generators all the time. And the other thing is the traffic and this sort of, I don't know, improvised way of navigating around the island. We had a really wonderful driver fixer who was working with us, and I was sort of constantly in awe of his ability to get around with no traffic lights and signs that had blown away. And he was like, oh, yeah, no, it's just down this road. So that was one of the things. And then this didn't surprise me because I saw it in New Orleans post-Katrina, but that sense of fierce commitment to the place you love. That always comes through. In any disaster, I think people tend to be really motivated by, you know, their love of their home. And that was something we heard a lot.
Well, you can catch the Marketplace Weekend special, The Economics of Disaster. It airs tonight at 9 and again Sunday at 7 a.m. And you can see pictures and read more reporting in Puerto Rico from Marketplace at marketplace.org. Lizzie O'Leary, thank you so much for your reporting, and thanks for taking the time to tell us about it.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.